Yeah, I brought your headphones so that your big old head wouldn't break mine or Beck's headphones. You ready?
Do I need a drink for this?
Huh? Yeah, you brought a drink. You're fine. Oh my god.
What are you laughing at?
Are you ready to...
Oh, is this not even set up?
No.
Oh, okay.
You're ridiculous.
Sorry, it's cold.
Oh my god, no. So that microphone in front of you.
Perfect.
You're going to want to make sure your face is about 6 or so inches away from it.
6 or so inches away?
Uh-huh.
Anyway. I'm glad you think that is 6 inches.
No, I'm actually having mine further back because I have a better microphone than you do.
Oh, okay.
Sure, this is 6 inches. Okay.
Wait, does that make me like 3?
So, we're live.
Oh.
Thank you for joining us.
Hi. I'm Kyle. I'm the fiancé. I hope you haven't heard anything about me.
So welcome to Casual Casualties. I'm Bree.
And I'm Kyle.
And today we're switching things up just a little bit. If you couldn't tell by the absence of Becca.
And the awkward silences.
And the awkward silences. Yeah, it's going to be a weird one, guys. I'm sorry. I hope you can just bear with us. What are you staring at?
Well, what does Becca do when she sits here? Does she just stare at the wall?
No, she also stares at me longingly, but it's not as weird when she does it.
Not that kind of sisters, Becca.
Fuck. Alrighty, so tell me though, like, you got anything cool going on lately? Anything interesting? Any more Hatchet Man stories that you haven't told me about?
Did I tell you about the lady on, I think, probably meth, who drove up on our curb?
Wait, what?
So, at work the other day, it's about...
I love that it took you this long to tell me.
And you didn't ask. Are you sure I didn't tell you? I feel like I've told you, but I'll tell you again anyway.
Oh, okay.
At work, like 2 hours before we open, a woman, like, drives right up to our front doors, then gets out of her car, but she doesn't put her car in neutral. So the car just starts idling away or rolling away in first gear, and she, like, comes banging on our door.
Oh my god!
Oh, that was loud.
Yeah!
And she's banging and screaming, like, hey, let me in, let me in, let me in! And my boss is like, no. and then her car just starts like idling into a bush and just...
So it just idles away, slams into a bush, and the bush
away,
is just holding this bitch up.
Jumps a curb, slams into a bush, and then so we call the cops like we do, and luckily they were like 2 minutes away, so then...
They're in the same building, they better fucking be 2 minutes away.
Yeah. So they send the cop out, and the cop like detains her, backs her car up, there's half a bush stuck to the front of her car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically the whole story.
Did she get in?
They drove her off somewhere, and her car stayed in our parking lot for 3 days.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fun. Just an average Tuesday, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah. Working with the public. It do be like that, though.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Am I not speaking directly enough at this thing?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Are you not hearing yourself very well?
I do hear myself, but I don't know if I'm supposed to hear myself.
You're good. You're good. You're good. Do I have any announcements? I do want to apologize for us missing an episode last week. Unfortunately, Becca was not feeling well. On top of Becca being a mom, we ended up just skipping it and it didn't work out. I'm really sorry about that. But that's why we get a super extra special episode with Kyle today.
Woohoo!
Yay!
You don't want to make up some crazy story about Becca? Like,
she got bit by a shark. It was kind of crazy.
Hit by a bus?
No! I need to get... Well, I guess bit by a shark isn't far-fetched. So I need to come up with something far-fetched so it would never actually happen.
Mm. Yeah, we're going to California next
weekend. Yeah, we're going to California next weekend, so bit by a shark could happen, and I don't want to jinx it. I don't know. I'm not very good at crazy stories. So, are you ready for this crazy story? great segue.
What are we learning about this?
Jesus!
I'm sorry.
Keep your limbs contained.
I am bony.
I will have to edit all of that out.
Sorry.
You good? You ready?
No.
Contained?
Not at all.
Yeah, so this isn't Kyle's genre at all. So it's going to be
sci-fi kind of guy.
This is going to be interesting today. We are going to talk about the disappearance and potential murder of Joan Risch. Risch. R-I-S-C-H. Risch.
All right, then.
Risch.
And how did Joan die?
Well, we're going to have a little bit of foreplay first. Jesus, Kyle.
Let's get straight to the action.
Jesus.
How did he die? Did he go to jail?
Well, the murderer go to jail.
Oh, Joan. Yeah, that makes sense.
She was born in Brooklyn, New York, 1930.
Depression era.
Her parents were Harold and Josephine Bord.
Depressing.
And their family ended up moving to Jersey about 9 years later. But in the 40s, there was a quote-unquote suspicious fire that ended up killing both of her parents.
Suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Okay, anything else known about that fire?
So the fire killed her parents and ended up leading her to be adopted by other family members. When she got adopted, she took their name at Natrice and ended up getting a new social security card with this new name.
Dang.
Weird.
Has it always been that easy to get new social security cards?
I don't know. Depression era, bruh.
Just take somebody else who died.
They'll be like, oh, you can have this one.
He's not using it anymore.
Jesus. So, that's all I know about the fire. I know it killed her parents. I also know she had a brother, and I don't know if her brother got adopted with them. I'm assuming he would. The fuck did you just do?
Is that me? Yours?
It wasn't me.
Anyhow, how old was she during the fire?
So, about 10.
Young.
Yeah, so she was about 10 years old when this fire happens, leaves her and her little brother, older brother, as an orphan. They are both adopted. She takes on the new name Natrice, gets a new social security card, and aside from that, not much is known about her younger age. There is a young colleague friend of hers that made the claim that Joan expressed that she was sexually assaulted as a child in her parents' home before this fire happened.
That's not good.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's all I got about her early childhood. I do know that from a young age, she loved literature and reading, and ultimately kind of led her to go into college. She attended Wilson College in Pennsylvania and in 1952 graduated with a degree in English literature. And with that degree, she jumps straight into publishing as a secretary.
Wow. Read the credentials.
Okay, so she's pumped. She likes what she's doing. She's doing the damn thing. She's got a degree. She's working it. She's got a job. She's a boss fucking woman. And then, just like all boss women do, eventually she settled down and had babies.
Not all boss women, yeah.
Ew. No, so, with a lot of her editorial assistant secretary jobs, she goes from being a secretary to being a secretarial supervisor, an editorial assistant. She jumps around from a few companies, and eventually in 1956 Joan gets married to Martin Risch, who was an executive at one of the companies that she was editorial assistant teaming for.
That's one way to get a promotion.
Whoa, now. Actually, instead of a promotion, she actually quit her job and became a stay-at-home mom when her first child was born. She gave birth to Lillian in 1957.
Oh, geez, that's a demotion, if anything.
Hey, according to every other woman who has ever tried talking me into having kids, being a mother is the most important job a woman will ever have.
That's because they want you to share in their misery. If you were on fire, wouldn't you want to not be alone?
No, I would not want to be on fire.
See, that's why you wouldn't make a good parent.
Fair. Anyway, So Lillian is born in 1957, and then David, not too long after, in 1959 was born. So during this time, Joan becomes a stay-at-home mom, and they end up eventually moving to Ridgefield, Connecticut.
Ooh. Bougie.
Yes, very fancy. So while acting as a stay-at-home mom, Joan doesn't let that stop her from just kind of doing her own thing. She ends up being part of the League of Women Voters and wanted to become a teacher once the children were older. So once the kids were, like, education age, she wanted to become a teacher and go to school with them, essentially.
Mm.
Her husband, Martin, continued his career with the Fitchburg Paper Company, which was the company that he worked at when they met. And by all accounts, the family was really popular. They were well-known and in good standing with their neighbors and community. They were friendly. They went to all the weird potlucks with all the weird jello desserts that everyone always had back then. Like, normal, weird, like, weird, but normal suburban family.
Depression-era cakes.
Two-family household. A little boy and a little girl. The depiction of the American dream.
Mm.
Two-car household, too.
Okay.
So they were making it.
They were doing pretty good. I mean, for the 30s, that's fine.
Two cars and a two-story house with a yard.
Yeah, they must have at least worked a summer job to afford that in the 30s.
Yeah, I know. So let's get to the juicy bit. October 24th, 1961. Martin, her husband, leaves early that morning to take an 8 a.m. flight to Logan Airport, New York, for a business trip.
Okay. Logan
convenient.
Early in the morning.
Convenient.
Hmm.
So later that morning,
Jim Jones, the punch bowl maker.
The Jamestown Jimmy
Jones.
Okay. Topic. Anyways. So, later that morning, Joan woke her children, fed them breakfast, and got them ready. She drops David off with a neighbor so that she can take Lillian to go to a dentist appointment, where Lillian was scheduled to get a cavity filled. They took the family's blue 1951 Chevrolet, and at the appointment, Joan made a follow-up appointment for the 31st, not too long after, and paid $40 in advance. Well, $40. Part of it was in advance, and part of it was for the current services that they just did.
Perfect.
Not that big of a deal, right?
Seems normal to me.
After the appointment, Joan and Lillian stops at a department store where they bought some PJs for David and a bra for herself. She also paid for this purchase in cash. And they doubled back to pick up David from the neighbor and went home.
Did they have credit cards back then?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
All right.
I didn't do that part of the research. I just know she was carrying cash.
Perfect.
So, she picks up David, takes him home, and while they were gone, she found that the newspaper and the milk were both delivered. And later on, during questioning, the delivery men claimed nothing was unusual about the house while they were gone. So, not too long after arriving at the home, she's feeding the children lunch, and the dry cleaner just lets himself in the front door to pick up some suits that needed to be dry cleaned. According to this dry cleaner, it was pretty common for Joan to leave the front door unlocked, and he was regularly just letting himself in to grab the suits to go dry clean them for Martin.
That's how you get murdered.
We're getting there. So, the dry cleaner comes, picks up the men's suits, and then she's making lunch for her. Apparently, I moved enough today. My watch is yelling at me. So she makes lunch for her children. She calls Barbara Baker, who was a neighbor. And Barbara brings over her son, Douglas, who is also four, to play with Lillian. And they played in the back yard. And Joan puts David down for his nap. So the children are playing together around 1 p.m. The two children were playing in the backyard. And Joan is kind of noticed going in, back in and out of the house, checking on the kids, going out into the front yard, getting something out of the car. And then by about 2-ish, Joan gathers Lillian and Douglas and sends them across the street to the baker's house, where the children played on the baker's swings. 2:15, Mrs. Baker notices that Joan, in a plain trench coat, walking up her driveway with something red in her arms, and she's holding whatever this red thing is out in front of her. She's walking from her car into her house.
Like dark red.
Like red. That's all I got is red. And she's holding it out in front of her, almost as if she's trying not to let it spill on her. Mm-hmm. So around 3-ish, Virginia Key, another neighbor's daughter, gets off the bus and notices an odd car in front of Joan's house. Another neighbor was able to corroborate this when they stated that while driving up the street a few minutes later, they stopped to let this car pull out of Joan's driveway and drive away. Hmm. And so that's about 3:15, 3:20-ish. 3:40, Mrs. Baker returns Lillian to her home. So she's just standing in her front yard and waving at Lillian. Lillian goes across the street and up to the house door. Mrs. Baker does not pay any more attention to that. She grabs her children, they get in the car, she goes shopping.
Okay.
About an hour and a half later, Mrs. Baker comes back home, and Lillian comes back over, and she goes, so Mommy's not home, and the kitchen is covered in paint.
Red paint?
Red paint.
Uh-oh.
So naturally, Mrs. Baker calls the cops. Sergeant Mike McHugh arrives on scene within 5 minutes of this call. And before going into the house, he stops to speak with Miss Baker briefly, just so he can kind of figure out what she knows. And when he goes into the house, he immediately finds the kitchen is covered in blood.
Oh, no. What's his name? Mike McHugh.
Sergeant Mike
McHugh.
Sergeant Mike McHugh on the case.
On the case.
So.
Covered in blood. That's gross.
So the kitchen is covered in blood. The kitchen table is completely overturned, and the wall-mounted phone is ripped out of the wall mount, covered in blood, and is sitting in a trash can in the middle of the kitchen floor. The trash can itself typically stays underneath the kitchen table, underneath the kitchen sink. There's immediately he's like, "Oh God, she attempted to commit suicide. I gotta go find her." So he searches through the house, cannot find a body.
What?
And he's like, "Oh no, I gotta call my boss."
God forbid.
So he calls dispatch, and dispatch is like, "Yeah, you should probably get sergeant on this one." So they call sergeant. What scared me? So they call the sergeant over, and this very quickly takes up most of the task force. Because they're now looking for a missing and injured woman.
Hmm. Did the blood trails lead out of the house?
So the blood was mostly in the kitchen. However, they did find trails of it into the living room. They found a lot of weird spots of it. So, like, there was a spot at the foot of the stairs. There was a spot at the top of the stairs. There was multiple large spots in her bedroom. There was a spot in the children's bedroom in front of the window. In the living room, there was also clothing items of David's, her youngest, that were covered in blood, almost as if they were used to mop something up, but they were also pressed into the carpet as if something heavy was on top of it for a long period of time. There was like a little bit of speculation, like maybe a body was laying on them for a little bit, but it's hard to tell. There was also a, like, roll of paper towels on the floor in the kitchen that had been slightly unrolled, as if someone had taken a paper towel to wipe their hands, but the missing paper towel was not there.
Weird.
Odd, I guess, yeah. So they get a hold of most of the police station, and they notify any and all medical areas in the vicinity. So, like, all the hospitals and everything, to be looking out for a woman who is missing about a liter or so, about a half a liter of blood, and matches Joan's description.
Okay.
They also notify Martin's company that there was an emergency and they need to get a hold of Martin. The company redirects them to Martin in New York. I think he was there for some kind of conference or something. So they're able to get a hold of Martin, and he then takes the very next flight home. Some of the more additional clues that they found, there were the mail had been delivered but not been brought in. When they questioned the mailman, they said that there was nothing odd about the house. The phone directory, which I'm assuming is like ye old contact list.
Ye old contact list.
Back when you didn't have cell phones to type everything in, you had this weird book that sat by the phone that had everybody's numbers saved in it.
Yeah, I've seen those used to stop bullets before.
So that book was opened to the emergency section where you put in your emergency contacts, but it was empty. There was nothing had been put into it yet. Yeah. There's also an empty liquor bottle that was found in the trash. Now, Mr. Martin admitted that that liquor bottle...
The liquid butter, yes.
The liquor bottle was one that he and Joan had finished together that night before. Mm. But what he couldn't explain was the multiple empty beer bottles. He was not a beer drinker.
Was she?
No. He didn't know where they came from.
Well, I know before I commit a murder, I like to have a few drinks, relax kinda, a little bit.
Yeah, chill your nerves a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's also nice to kind of sit there and stew when you're done with the murder and just kind of have a nice cold one.
Like watching the rain on a nice day.
Just... Exactly, yeah. Completely neutral, casual, it's fine. For sure. Everyone does that, right?
I know I do.
Oh my god. They also noticed that the crunch... I can't fucking talk today. You want to just do this?
Yeah, sure. Let me see the laptop. No, it's better hearing you do it.
I got stressed. I was like, I don't know if I can trust you with this. You're just going to read it word for word.
Word for
word. And it's not going to sound right because I bullet point everything.
Yeah, I'll be like, 5 liters of blood, 7 fingers gone missing, trash can full of yams.
Full of yams?
Granted, these bullet points make no sense.
Well, the yams are actually our shopping list.
Oh. Why do you have 2 tabs open right now?
I don't know. Brain works in weird ways. So, the trench coat that she had worn out to run her earlier errands?
Not errands.
To run her earlier errands was still in the house. However, a more plain, like, I think it was like a tan-colored coat was missing. Her pocketbook, yield wallet?
People still have pocketbooks, Brianna.
Nah.
Yield Apple Pay.
Should have had about $10 in it. Based off of the investigator's math, you know, she had cast a check the day before, and after everything that she had spent at all of her stops, she should have had about $10 left over. Mm-hmm. Which, when... translated into today's money is about $90. Somewhat significant.
Yeah.
But it was empty. There was no cash in it.
How many stops did she make?
Just two.
That's some generous tipping.
Well, she spent $40 at the... What do you mean? We don't even know how much she actually had to begin with.
Oh, well then I guess it's not generous tipping, but...
No. The $10 equates to $90 today.
Okay.
Not that she started with $90.
Sure. No, I gathered that.
Oh, well, what were you worried
about? I just assumed she tipped equivalents of $90 over the course of the day.
No.
To somebody.
No.
Ye old Uber.
Oh, so you don't think that she... Okay, so I understand now. You think that she was tipping and maybe being a nice person. My thought process was... Someone fucking stole it.
Well, I mean, after you murder somebody, you have to have money for a cab to go home.
Fair. That's fair. Are you done attacking my desk?
Your desk had it coming.
So, based off the amount of blood that was lost, they were able to figure out that it was only about 0.5 liter of blood, despite the large quantity of the house that was covered in it. It was just really heavily smeared.
Wow. And for comparison, how much blood does a person normally have?
6 liters?
Wow.
I think.
That doesn't seem like a lot at all.
No, it doesn't seem like a lot. Hang on.
Do you want me to cue up some elevator music?
Sure.
Panic. na 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 na. Bum, ba dum, bum, bum,
bum. 1.2 to 1.5 gallons.
Oh wow! So yeah, you were spot on. With cool. 6 liters, yeah.
Cool. That's what I thought. So I thought I was right. So it looks like she had only lost about half a liter, which, yes, is a significant wound. However, very livable. And is not something that's going to kill you immediately. It could take a day or two for you to lose enough blood to actually kill you.
Wow.
And that's because your body is going to coagulate and it's going to try and staunch the bleeding.
I mean, depending on the wound, right?
Depending on the wound, naturally.
That is crazy.
So yeah, no, she definitely could have survived this. It's actually pretty plausible. So the smearage from the kitchen leads down the driveway and ends at her car.
Mm.
They found blood near the front right fender. The left...
The car was still there?
Yes.
Oh.
Her car is still there. And so they find blood on the front right fender, the left side of the hood, and in the very center inside of the trunk.
So, like, somebody tried stuffing her in the trunk.
Maybe.
Hmm.
Now, it ended rather abruptly off to the side of her car, and some people believe that maybe that was them, whomever they may be, putting her in a car. Which kind of correlates with the fact that somebody else saw a car leaving that vicinity.
A suspicious car.
Don't be suspicious. Yeah.
A little too late for that.
Yeah. So, this kind of confused the fuck out of the investigators. To begin with, they didn't know which point was the starting point and which point was the ending point.
Mm-hmm.
Was she initially injured at her car? To which she then led her attackers into her house with her sleeping child in it? Where they trashed the house? Or did this begin in the kitchen because she was a dumbass and didn't lock her fucking doors? And then end with her being dragged down the driveway and put into a car.
Okay.
They couldn't tell heads or tails of it. What they could tell was that the blood type was O, which is not only the most popular blood type, it is Jones' blood type.
Hmm. And my blood type.
And your blood type.
Maybe I was there.
God damn it, Kyle. What are you doing out here?
You know, the 60s were wild. I was all over the place.
Fair. Just bleeding all over other people's houses.
Yeah.
So rude.
These nosebleeds, man, they get real bad.
You do have shitty fucking nosebleeds.
People weren't supposed to live in the desert.
You weren't supposed to live in the desert.
Amen. So, what was the next step in the investigation?
So, it's also kind of important to note the lack of evidence. For starters, there's no body. Second off, they also did not find any bloody footprints.
I might have missed a huge step. So the daughter was the only one in the home at the time, right? And she was sleeping during all of it?
The son. The 2-year-old son is napping in his room, and he was in a crib, so he couldn't have gotten out.
Hmm. Okay. And the daughter was the one who went and notified the neighbors?
So yeah, the daughter goes into the house, sees that it's a mess, sees that mom isn't there, comes back out of the house.
Okay.
And goes to tell the neighbor, mommy isn't home and the kitchen is covered in paint.
Okay. And was the young boy still in his crib?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the little boy was fine. He was not harmed. He did not go missing. He...
Did they check his crib for murder weapons?
Well, children are demonic, so I wouldn't be surprised if this baby planned all of this. So, yeah. They did actually find bloody fingerprints. However, Joan wasn't there, so they couldn't test to see if they were her fingerprints.
Oh.
So there's just unidentified fingerprints. But they do not have any footprints at all, which means it almost seems unlikely that this scene was as hectic as it appears.
Mm-hmm.
Because for you to not be able to step in any kind of blood while struggling and fighting with somebody,
yeah,
you either had to be way too lucky, or something else was going on.
A 2-year-old playing The Blood is Lava. Just saying.
I mean, yeah, that's possible. So, but there was no footprints at all, which leads some people to believe that this was very melodically just kind of placed, mm-hmm. rather than actually being a hectic crime scene.
Interesting.
So, well, Jones' disappearance was obviously crazy enough that it catches the attention of reporters, naturally. One reporter, Serene Garrison, mm-hmm. She reported with the Fence Viewer, which was the local newspaper, decided to hit up the library and research these disappearances and if there was any other ones and anything like that. And some of the resources that Serene uses is a book titled Brigham Young's 27th Wife, which it's an interesting gentleman, interesting concept. He ended up having 55 wives, I think, by the end of it. Wow. 59 children with at least 16 of his wives.
Trying to be the next Solomon the Great there.
He is the founder of a big church, so that's kind of...
That explains it.
Yeah, that is something to glance at if you're bored. This book details the 27th wife's disappearance and murder.
What did he do with the first 26? Did he divorce them the old-fashioned way, or...?
No, it was polygamy.
Oh! I don't know why that wasn't an option in my head.
No, polygamy.
Oh, okay.
Hence the whole religion thing.
Got it.
Yep. The train is gone.
Trains are on tracks.
Yep.
Follow the tracks.
I'm working on it. So, she also looks into a book titled Into Thin Air, which, this book details a woman who also goes missing, and it had a lot of very similar details to Joan's disappearance. Mm. Both titles, interestingly enough, had been checked out by Joan in less than a month before her disappearance.
What?
So that's weird.
That's a little weird.
There were a group of library volunteers who looked through all of the records to find...
It's admittedly also weird that the first thing reporters would do is, let's go see what book she checked out at the library.
Well, from my research, it shows that that wasn't actually her goal. Her goal was to go look up other, suspicious disappearances.
Hmm. And just, hey, while we're at the library.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, Joan is an avid reader and was well known to be an avid reader.
Mm, so maybe somebody...
So there. it's not too far off to assume that there was a reporter who just wanted a different angle, a sensational piece,
sure.
a look into the dead Joan's life, like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Reporters are always looking for another tidbit of information to try and get people to buy their paper.
For sure.
So it's not far off to believe that she would have just been... shooting for nothing and found something. But a group of library volunteers looked through Joan's records and found that she had taken out over 25 books in the summer of 61, a large majority of which had to do with murders and missing person cases.
Prolific. Wow.
So yeah, a lot of the journal colleagues of forgot how to say her name.
Did she Gone Girl her husband?
Maybe.
Is that where this is going?
Maybe. Serene and a lot of her other colleagues kind of began to believe that she staged this crime scene and then disappeared voluntarily. Which
I'm sold on it.
I mean,
of this point, I'm believing that.
I'm not. Okay, so here's the problem that I have with this theory. I also regularly read and consume a lot of true crime literature.
And for the record, if she goes missing, she reads a lot of true crime literature.
So what I'm saying, though, is like, it's a hobby that some people enjoy. That doesn't necessarily mean that she was just gathering tools to be able to Gone Girl herself before Gone Girl was even a thing.
But it's
it does suspicious. Look suspicious. Yeah, it does. Still, regardless of this new development, the police didn't just say, whoop, she's gone. and moved on with their life. They actually continued to do some research and digging. On their suspect list, surprisingly enough, Martin, the mailman, the milkman, and the tailor all had reasonable alibis, and none of which made the list, despite the fact that they all had direct connections to Joan and or directly were in or around the house all day that day. A main suspicion was Robert Foster. So Robert Foster was in the area visiting homes to discuss how the area recently been dubbed a historical park. And this new change would require all non-historic buildings built after 1775 to be removed.
Wow.
So he was working with the department to buy back or to buy or purchase the buildings so that they could remove them. A lot of the women in the neighborhood felt he overstayed his welcome, which made them feel very uncomfortable. He had visited Joan a month before her disappearance.
Okay.
Like, almost exactly.
I feel a little bad for that guy. Like, you know, this guy was kind of creepy, and I saw him here about a month ago.
That is the mom mentality, though, of a tight-knit community. Yeah. I've seen it happen in so many cases. Well, like, there's this one case where, like, a man's little girl goes missing. And the entire neighborhood, like, they're sitting out on their porches watching for suspicious cars. Mm-hmm. A truck that they don't recognize is now being called into the police. Mm-hmm. Turns out the dad's the one who killed his daughter.
Of course.
Naturally.
Yeah.
That's actually a case I did recently. You would know if you listened to my podcast.
I totally listen to your podcast.
Yeah.
Every episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So then which episode was that?
Jeez, I must have missed that one.
Alrighty. So, aside from him, there really wasn't a lot of suspects. They couldn't figure it out. Some of the theories were that I lost the one that I wanted to start with.
Sure. Did they ever identify what kind of car it was that was seen there?
Nothing that I was able to find. Mm. But it is weird.
That is weird.
That car is weird. This case is still technically open.
Oh. Well, that's...
Martin never had her formally declared deceased. And unfortunately, this kind of leads to the very first theory that she gone girled him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He refuses to pronounce her dead, which kind of made everyone want to believe that she's still alive, which wanted to believe that, oh yeah, no, she faked her death, grabbed her cash, called an ex-boyfriend of hers or whatever, and got the fuck out of Dodge. I mean, she was a clever woman. She was smart. She had an education. She may not have really been wanting the housewife life. There's also the fact that there's an empty bottle, which makes anybody and everybody want to assume that maybe he was a drinker and she just wasn't happy with that.
Yeah.
So she could have just found a way out.
Got up and left.
Just got up and left. There is the fact that she is a mother and she has two small children. And nobody wants to believe that a mother will get up and willingly walk out of her children's life.
I mean, I believe that.
Unfortunately, it happens. So, but that is a hesitation on most people as to why they don't think that one actually happened. There's also, like, her spotty past. Like, she is kind of, there is that, like, quote-unquote mysterious fire. There's a lot that is alluded to, but she doesn't actually claim as her past. Like, you know, this whole sexual assault that she, like, dealt with as a child. So, some people think that maybe there is just something in her past that finally caught up to her. An old family member who's not quite happy with the fact that this little 10-year-old maybe killed their family members.
An old loan she couldn't pay back to the mob.
An old loan, yep, maybe. So, I don't know. I mean, her true crime interest also kind of adds up to the whole she definitely gone-girled him.
I feel like you're building me up for a twist.
No, this is all I got. The problem that I have with the Gone Girl theory is she had to have help.
Did she, though?
She had to. Where would she have gone? A single woman in the Depression era time frame with just $10 in her pocket?
Yeah, well, this was the 60s, right?
This is 17... Where did I just have it? Or sorry, yeah, 1961.
1961? I mean, I feel like she could have gone just about anywhere in the United States. Got in her car, drove off, and found a job anywhere.
It is tough. So, there is the fact that, despite the fact that he never had her formally declared deceased, Martin made a very public statement stating, "I think Joan is almost certainly dead."
Hmm. Fair enough.
So, some people are concerned with, like, maybe he set up her disappearance and then waited until he was out of town to make sure it was carried out so that there was no suspicion that fell on him.
It's always the husband.
The husband did it. The husband always fucking does it. Except for with, the Schaefer family.
Oh yeah, who did it there? The brother?
Definitely wasn't Brian Schaefer, that's for fucking sure. If you listened to that episode, you know why I say that.
Once again, I listened to all of your episodes, as they release.
Oh, I said Schaefer. It's not Schaefer, it's Peterson.
Oh.
Brian Schaefer was the guy from Ohio who disappeared. No, Lacey Peterson and her husband Scott Peterson. Hmm. And their unborn baby. Sad.
Yeah.
Okay. So, despite him never having her pronounced dead, he thinks she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, why though?
Insurance money, perhaps?
I don't know. Well, because if he had her declared dead, he would be able to claim insurance money, if he had any.
Maybe he just really wanted her gone. It's not even worth it.
Yeah, maybe he's just tired of listening to her nag at him.
That would be a really good, like, alibi. Like, hey, bro, I'm leaving town for a week. Can you come kill my wife while I'm gone?
I err on the side of I think she gone girled him.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it,
not even her own footprints were found in the blood.
Not even her own.
That's what's crazy.
Like, that's the suspicious part. Like, that makes me think that whatever... Because there was a spot of blood inside her trunk.
Did they question the two-year-old? I know it's, like, trying to squeeze blood out of a rock, but...
I didn't find anything as far as questioning of the two-year-old goes. It could have happened, but it's not widely reported if it was.
Hmm.
But see, this is my thought process. This is my theory. I don't know if she got it from a butcher. I don't know if she got it from a friend of a friend of a friend. I think that spot in the trunk of her car came from a container that had blood in it.
Oh, but didn't it... Wasn't there a trail leading to the trunk as well?
Or from
the trunk, but... You think she not only spilled it in the trunk while driving, but every step along the way?
She was seen...
But it matched her blood type.
She was seen holding something outstretched... and red while walking up the driveway.
Outstretched and red.
So she had something in her hands and her arms were outstretched, so like as if holding it far in front of her to keep it from spilling on her.
Was this prior to like DNA testing and stuff?
Yeah, so there was no DNA testing to be done. They were able to test that what type of blood it was, and it was O type, just like hers.
Okay.
But, I mean, this is also before major fingerprinting, too. Mm. Like, they didn't have any of her fingerprints or anything like that on file to use.
So you think she transported the blood from somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, I can...
That's my thought process. How I would do it. And so, like, it's just, it's too perfect that there was no footprints. At all. None. Not even hers.
Not even hers. And it happened exactly while her child was out of the house.
While her child was out of the house and the other one was sleeping.
Her ex-boyfriend picked her up right up front.
I don't know. Maybe she somehow found a lover and they ran away together?
I mean, I would go out the back door if I was running away.
Like, dude.
You know, meet me at Circle K up the road.
Right? So, I don't know. I want to say that she ran away.
That's... And now, husband always does it.
You think it was the husband? You think the husband paid to have her killed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Husband's always at fault.
Maybe the husband was going to pay to have her killed, and she knew that.
Whoa.
So she staged her own death.
Inception.
So she staged her own death to make sure that they couldn't kill her, because now she's already dead.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Exactly.
What was her name?
Joan Rich.
Joan Rich.
Crazy, huh?
Very.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool, cool, ka-choo, my dude.
Cool, cool, cool. How would you fake your death? How would you blame me for your death? I want this recorded, so...
I would never blame you for my death. Okay, so first things you get into... Honestly.
Just beat me to death with a PS4 controller and...
I feel like the easiest way would just be to just disappear. Just get up and walk away. It's hard nowadays, though, because there's so many things that link you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my phone, my watch, any of my... Like, I would not be able to bring anything out that front door except for the clothes on my back, and
wait,
that's it.
Wait a second. I have a pencil. I want to write this down. Your phone, your watch, clothes on your back, you say?
So, yeah, no, like, nowadays I feel like it's near to impossible with all of the ways that you can be tracked via technology.
Mm.
If you want to disappear, you have to be okay with getting rid of everything.
I feel like it'd be really easy for you to kill me.
To kill you?
To kill me. Like, I mean, emotionally, I'm sure you would have a hard time. But, like, the actual act of killing me, like, you just wait for me to be working on the truck or something and just run by and kick the jack stand and bam. Like... No. I'm gone. Freak accident. That's what he gets for buying Harbor Freight jack stands.
Silly boy. All I have to do is let the dog sleep on your pillow.
Yep. Yeah.
Silly works. Boy. All I have to do is give you a fruit smoothie with a single strawberry in it.
Dude, full send. You'd all eat that.
I know you will, and you'll be confused because it tastes better than it usually does.
It sure does. And then my face starts to get red. I pop a couple of bennies and I sleep.
No, what I gotta do is wait until we're on a hiking trail. Where you don't have any bennies to pop. Bennies as in Benadryls, not like...
If we're 2 hours into a hiking trail...
And just you pull just pull a fruit smoothie?
I'm going to be a little suspicious about that.
No, you're not. You're going to be like, oh my god, thank you so much. The smoothie sounds amazing right now.
I mean, probably, but... One, I know you would have drinking it by the time we get 2 miles into the trail. 2 hours into the trail, whatever.
And then you're dead.
No.
Yeah, and I'll leave you for the mountain.
It's going to be warm. It's going to be gross. I wouldn't touch that. Also, I'm pretty confident that I couldn't get you to hike far enough away from the car that I wouldn't be able to run back to the car in time.
Okay, that's fucking fair. I'll just wait until we're at the ocean and then not tell you that you're swimming out too far.
Yeah, not yell at me.
Yeah, all of a sudden, boom, you're dead.
I can float for days. Okay, minutes.
So yeah, that's how people go.
Little. Okay, now that I have a marker on the timestamp there, about how much of this do you typically cut out and post?
Well, we haven't talked all that much, so I'm not going to cut a lot of this out of post.
Okay.
Why?
Just wondering.
I'm gonna leave all this in too.
Oh no.
I'm gonna leave your little. You're funny.
Interesting.
Yeah. Alrighty. So if you want to email us, you can send us an email at casualcasualtiespodcast@gmail.com. I know it's a mouthful, don't worry. It will be linked in the bio of any and all of our episodes, as well as the bio of our main page. Those emails can tell, like, dude, give us anything. We want stories. We want maybe some episode recommendations. Maybe some critiques. That's fine. Hit us up. Let us know, because we're here.
because like any operation, we're going to experience some growing pains. So let us know what we did good. If we did anything good, let us know what we did bad. I'm sure it's a page.
I hope so.
And yeah, we will see you next time.
You're not getting off that easy.
Damn.
No, we also have show notes as well as pictures linked in our Instagram account. Casual_casualties_podcast, which also is linked in the bio. We have our thingies.
I love your thinking face.
Fuck off. So we also have our Flatter and our Patreon linked below. Do not feel the need to contribute. If you do, thank you so thoroughly. You will have a plethora of added episodes and bonus content, most of which includes Luna's ranting and babbling. I know everyone's going to love and enjoy that. If you do not have the ability or feel the need to help us monetarily, you are more than welcome to please rate, review, subscribe, share, tell your friends' friends, tell your aunt. My aunt is pretty cool and listens, so that's cool. Did you tell your aunt, Kyle?
If you're allowed to listen to podcasts in prison, Crystal, please please rate and subscribe us.
God damn it, Kyle.
Oh, the other aunt?
The other aunt.
Oh, okay. No, she's good.
Okay, cool. So now we're all good.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on our casual crusade.
What she said.
Okay, bye. Can you say bye?
Bye.